in Washington, wishing that you will have a terrific Tuesday.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. An investigation by the AP and PBS series Frontline documented a sophisticated Russian smuggling operation to steal Ukrainian grain. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
International criminal law attorney David Crane says taking food supplies from civilians in an occupied zone is a violation of the Geneva Convention. Russia says the claim is false and baseless. Maritime risk analyst Amin Daniel says this would be hard to prove.
Please bear in mind, grain is not oil.
Tests can be done on oil to check its origin.
I suspect in grain it could be a bit more difficult. Hence, falsifying the manifest even more important.
Satellite imagery and other data show ships carrying grain from Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine to ports in the Middle East. I'm Ed Donahue.
North Korea has fired an intermediate-range ballistic missile over Japan for the first time in years, in 5 years, as it escalates tests of weapons designed to strike regional U.S. allies. That launch early Tuesday forced Japan to issue evacuation notices to residents in the northeast and suspend trains. It was North Korea's most significant missile test since January. Japan and South Korea both called security meetings to discuss that launch. The launch is the fifth round of weapons tests by North Korea in the past 10 days in what was seen as an apparent response to recent military drills involving the United States and its allies in North Asia. Again, North Korea has now fired an intermediate-range ballistic missile over Japan for the first time in 5 years. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. There are warnings about foreign efforts to sway Americans in their votes. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports.
U.S. officials say Russia is working to amplify doubts about the integrity of American elections, while China is interested in influencing policy perspectives in favor of Beijing. That concern aligns with an unclassified intelligence advisory that says China is probably seeking to influence select races to hinder candidates perceived to be particularly adversarial to Beijing. Officials say they have not identified any credible threats to the election infrastructure like voting machines, but the intelligence warning comes amid the peak of a midterm election campaign cycle in which a rising number of candidates and voters openly express a lack of confidence in the nation's democratic process. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
U.S. President Joe Biden promises to rebuild it all after visiting Puerto Rico on Monday to survey damage from Hurricane Fiona, as tens of thousands of people remain without power 2 weeks after the storm hit. In remarks, President Biden says he wants to help make sure Puerto Rico can rebuild for the long term.
We have to ensure that when the next hurricane strikes, Puerto Rico is ready. Today, I'm announcing more than $60 million in funding to help coastal areas in Puerto Rico become better prepared for the storm. For example, we can create a flood warning system to help shore up levees and flood walls.
Meanwhile, days after Hurricane Ian carved a path of destruction from Florida to the Carolinas, the dangers persisted and even worsened in some places. It was clear the road to recovery from the storm will be long and painful. More than 500,000 homes and businesses remained without power Monday in Florida, and it will be the weekend before most power is restored. And Ian is still not done. Officials warned there was the potential of coastal flooding from Long Island to North Carolina's Outer Banks, where the only highway to the barrier islands was closed by sand and seawater. 78 deaths have been blamed on Ian, with 71 of them reported in Florida alone. Jair Bolsonaro and Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, two diametrically opposed candidates for Brazil's presidency, have started a four-week race to pursue votes ahead of a winner-take-all runoff. After garnering more than 90% of the vote in Sunday's first round, leaving the competitors far behind, the incumbent President Bolsonaro and ex-President da Silva are already eyeing options that can push them over the top, whether political alliances or endorsements from candidates now eliminated. There is more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, October 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Duofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukrainian forces continue their rapid counteroffensive against retreating Russian troops.
We receive confirmations from the Ukrainian military in particular that Ukrainian forces managed to either destroy Russian manpower in this area or capture a lot of manpower.
And the U.S. considers its response to Russia's escalation of the war in Ukraine, including the use of nuclear weapons.
As dire as the reports may come across with how the U.S. is planning for contingencies, the Pentagon has always been preparing for these contingencies. Clearly, Russia has a nuclear capability.
And Brazil's election heads for a runoff in 3 weeks. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukrainian forces continue their rapid counteroffensive against retreating Russian troops after reclaiming the strategic city of Lyman in the east. Reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv updates Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller.
We hear and we receive confirmations from the Ukrainian military in particular that Ukrainian forces managed to either destroy Russian manpower in this area or capture a lot of manpower from Russian forces in Lyman. Some troops managed to escape, but again, we don't have officially confirmed numbers so far. However, previously, before the announcement of the liberation of Lyman, Ukrainian official sources were saying that we are talking about 5,000 of Russian servicemen in the area. But we also hear, and this also confirmed by the Russian sources, that actually Russian forces are moving deep into the Luhansk region. So they're trying to escape from Donetsk region directly to Luhansk region. For the moment, Ukrainian forces are advancing towards the city of Svatove, which is in Donetsk region.
And going back to the city of Lyman, can you kind of explain the significance of Ukraine retaking that city?
City of Lyman, located in Donetsk region, was the main logistic center for Russian forces in this area, and it remains a strategic place in terms of logistics. So for the moment, Ukrainian forces basically managed to cut a lot of logistical plans of the Russian forces in the area. And I'm talking not only about Donetsk region, but also Luhansk region. So it was an extremely strategic point. I think that in terms of strategic meaning of Lyman, it could be probably compared to the city of Izum itself. It just they had a little different specific meanings for the Russian forces. But anyway, for the moment, Ukrainian forces are controlling the city of Lyman and also the outskirts of the city and also the region around in particular. So for the moment, we can see from the official confirmed information that Ukrainian forces actually continue their advance, not only in Donetsk region, but also in Kharkiv region, because some territory of Kharkiv region remain occupied by Russian forces. So for the past days, we get confirmations along with the liberation of Lyman, or also about the liberation of such cities as Borova, which is Kharkiv region, and which is also basically located in one front line with the city of Lyman.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller. A Russian governor added to concerns in Russia about the mobilization of tens of thousands of men to fight in Ukraine, saying half who came to sign up in his region were unfit and sent home. Lucy Field of Reuters has more.
There have been further reports of chaos in Russia's mobilization for Ukraine less than 2 weeks after President Vladimir Putin announced it. According to the governor of the Khabarovsk region in Russia's Far East on Monday, about half the men called up there were found unfit for duty and sent home. Mikhail Degtyarev also fired the region's military commissar.
In 10 days, several thousand of our countrymen received summons and arrived at the military registration and enlistment offices. About half of them we returned home, as they did not meet the selection criteria for entering the military service. The work to achieve the goals set by the president continues.
Tens of thousands of Russian men were suddenly called up into the military, and tens of thousands of others have fled abroad. The governor's comments followed a major Ukrainian breakthrough at the weekend when its forces retook Lyman, the main Russian bastion in the north of Donetsk province. In another setback for Moscow, A Russian-installed official confirmed more Ukrainian advances along the west bank of the Dnipro River in Kherson on Monday. By Monday afternoon, Ukraine's defense ministry had confirmed only the recapture of one village close to the previous front line. Reuters was not able to independently verify the authenticity of the video, the date it was filmed, or the location of the footage. Kherson is among four occupied Ukrainian regions whose annexation Russia declared following hastily organized votes.
That's Lucy Field of Reuters. The United States is considering how to respond to potential Russian escalation of the war in Ukraine, including the threat to use nuclear weapons, as its forces continue to retreat in the face of Ukrainian counteroffensive. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb.
As dire as the reports may come across with how the U.S. is planning for contingencies, the Pentagon has always been preparing for these contingencies. Clearly, Russia has a nuclear capability, and clearly the United States is planning in the event that Russia would try to use that nuclear capability. So nothing new there. The new part comes on Russia's end. They're the ones that are ramping up this rhetoric on the nuclear front. And so U.S. officials that have been stressing that Russia needs to stop doing this. But bottom line, I just spoke with senior U.S. military official, and he says the United States has seen nothing at this stage that would compel the U.S. to change its nuclear posture.
Some analysts believe the administration and, of course, the highly intelligent people who are making all these assessments, but they are pointing out that you cannot really trust the Russian president, and he can do and move in unexpected ways, as he has shown in invading Ukraine, despite worldwide condemnation. So what gives them the confidence that Putin will play according to the rules?
Clearly, nobody's working on that assessment at this point. I mean, NATO has been sounding the alarm on everything out of the box, from sabotage on the Nord Stream attack. There were reports out just recently that NATO is concerned about Russian submarine diving in the White Sea, possibly to test the Poseidon torpedo. That's a nuclear capable Poseidon torpedo. So we can see Russia trying different ways that might just be psychological, or they may actually be intent on using them on the battlefield and ways to expand this war. And so what the United States is focusing on is trying to tone the rhetoric down, trying to get Russia out of Ukraine. They stress that Ukraine is defending its sovereign territory and is not trying to attack Russia. Russia attacked Ukraine. And also stressing that the West is not attacking Russia. Russia has attacked Ukraine, and that is why the West is supporting Ukraine, but not actually in a battle with Russia in itself.
That's VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Australia has hit Russia with a fresh round of sanctions over Moscow's claimed annexation of four regions in Ukraine. Travel restrictions and financial penalties have been imposed on Russian-backed separatists and senior officials. Campaigners are urging Australia to supply more weapons to Ukraine. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
The new sanctions imposed by Australia will target 28 Russian-appointed separatist ministers and officials. The government in Canberra has said they're trying to legitimise Russia's actions in Ukraine through sham referendums and disinformation. Friday, President Vladimir Putin declared that four regions of Ukraine, including Donetsk and Luhansk, would be absorbed into Russia. Australia has joined a chorus of global condemnation of the annexations. Defence Minister Richard Marles told reporters Sunday they were illegal.
The unprovoked aggression from Russia in respect of Ukraine is such a flouting of the UN Charter, of the global rules-based order, it must not be allowed to stand.
Ukrainian groups in Australia continue to urge the Canberra government to provide more military assistance to Ukraine. Australia has provided missiles and Bushmaster armoured personnel carriers. Stefan Romaniu, the co-chair of the Australian Federation of Ukrainian Organisations, says military support and sanctions send a clear message to Russia's President Putin.
What's an Australian Bushmaster going to do in Ukraine? What it's done is it's been very effective in helping to reclaim part of Ukrainian soil and taking over territory. This morning, Bushmasters are towing Russian tanks the question of whether sanctions work or don't, he has to get a message that he is not welcome in the international community. He's toxic.
Australia has already imposed sweeping sanctions on Russian institutions and its political and military leaders, including President Putin. Russia has responded by placing Australia and other European nations, the US, Japan and South Korea, on a list of unfriendly countries. Australia has also filed with the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ, in support of a case brought by Ukraine against Russia for violating the Genocide Convention. It joins other countries, including New Zealand, Denmark and Spain. The ICJ has ordered Russia to halt its invasion of Ukraine and said it hadn't seen any evidence to support Moscow's justification for the war. Russia has failed to comply with the order. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. At least 20 people were killed in a triple car bombing Monday in central Somalia, among them two local government officials. Witnesses say two vehicles loaded with explosives detonated in the morning and a third in the afternoon. Ahmed Mohamed Adnan reports.
The explosion struck the city of Baledweyne in central Somalia, killing at least 20 people and injuring dozens more. Baledweyne Police Commissioner Bishar Hussein confirmed the attacks and the death of some local officials. He says this work was planned by Al-Shabaab. Many officials, civilians and soldiers died. We are still counting the figures, he says. He adds, the officials who died include the Deputy Commissioner of Finance in Hiran region, MPs and ministers in Hirshabelle state. Jim Ali added that the rescue operations were still in progress. He says, we are excavating ruins of houses to remove injured people and dead bodies which are trapped there. He adds, we mourn, but we do not cry, and we will take revenge against Al-Shabaab. UN office in Somalia said in a tweet it condemned the attack and sent condolences to the families of the victims. Two of the bomb attacks struck the Lamagalai military base, which hosts the offices of the regional president and several local government officials. One car bomb detonated near the entrance gate. Then witnesses say a truck rushed toward the headquarters building and exploded. The third car bomb exploded while heading to the same target. The attacks come barely a day after Somali government announced the death of a senior Al-Shabaab commander, identified as Abdulkadir Nadir, in an airstrike in Middle Juba region. Nadir, who served as Al-Shabaab's finance chief, was thought to replace the group's leader Ahmed Diriye, or Abu Ubaida, who is reported to be sick. He had a $3 million bounty on his head from the U.S. government. Somali government described Nadir's killing as a thorn removed from the Somali nation. Somali government is currently involved in a major counterterrorism offensive against Al-Shabaab in central regions of the country. The operations has gained the support of local tribal militias in Hiran and Galgaduud regions who have joined forces with federal and state government authorities. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And in other news, Jair Bolsonaro outperformed expectations with his re-election bid, proving that the right-wing wave he rode to the presidency remains a force in Brazil and giving him an opponent, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, 3 weeks to pursue votes ahead of a winner-take-all runoff. The two diametrically opposed candidates garnered more than 90% of the votes in Sunday's first round, leaving their competitors far behind. Da Silva came just 1.6 percentage points shy of outright victory. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Ethiopia's Tigray rebels said they are withdrawing from parts of the neighboring Amhara region, which they entered shortly after renewed hostilities broke out with the federal government forces in August. Fred Hartau reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In a statement, the leadership of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or TPLF, described the move as a tactical redeployment of its forces and said it was necessary to counter an invasion from the north. The fresh fighting has seen Eritrea renew its involvement in the war, on the side of Ethiopia's federal government. Last month, the Tigray forces said Eritrea had launched a full-scale offensive across the region's northern border. Accordingly, we have made geographical adjustments by withdrawing from Amhara areas we had entered in the direction of the south, the latest TPLF statement said. It added that the withdrawal had been underway for 3 days and could be reversed if pro-government forces made further attacks on the southern fronts. Separately, Tigray spokesperson Getachew Reda said on Twitter that his region's forces had inflicted, quote, tens of thousands, end quote, of losses on pro-government units. VOA was unable to verify these claims. The areas affected by the fighting are mostly cut off from phone and internet access, and journalists are currently barred from travelling there. Ethiopia's federal government has remained tight-lipped amid the recent fighting and has not yet commented on the Tigray forces' latest statement. Eritrean forces fought alongside Ethiopia's federal forces when the Tigray conflict first broke out in November 2020, before they were both forced to withdraw in June 2021. Asmara's re-entry into the conflict has drawn international condemnation. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
A senior UN official warns flood-ravaged Pakistan is entering a second wave of death and destruction from outbreak of diseases, including malaria, dengue, diarrhea, scabies and other skin diseases. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Julian Harness is UN resident coordinator and humanitarian coordinator in Pakistan. He says the first wave of this climate-induced disaster has caused wide-scale destruction of roads, bridges, homes, and other infrastructure.
They show what happens, what are the consequences when we do not stop global warming. The scale of it is beyond imagination. It is a climate change is a disaster that you can see from space.
The United Nations reports an estimated 1,700 people have lost their lives, a third of them children, and 12,800 have been injured. It says more than 33 million people are affected by the floods, which have displaced 7.9 million. Harne says the wave of diseases spreading across the affected areas will lead to many more deaths, especially among children, millions of whom are suffering from acute malnutrition. UNICEF says at least 3.4 million children need immediate life-saving support. Harne says people are getting ill and dying from lack of health, nutrition, water and sanitation services, and lack of access to latrines across the flooded affected areas.
People who are defecating in the waters and then drinking from those same waters, children who are washing in those waters. So that is the driver of illness and disease. And at the same time, more than 1,700 health facilities and hospitals have either been destroyed or damaged.
Consequently, he notes the health systems that normally would protect people from such risks are not fully functioning. He says another threat is food insecurity. The World Food Program and Food and Agriculture Organization, he says, estimate the number of hungry people in Pakistan will rise from the current 5.9 million to 7.2 million without urgent international support. The United Nations issued a flash appeal for $160 million at the end of August. Given the immensity of the disaster and the growing needs, Harness says, the UN will launch a revised life-saving appeal for $816 million on Tuesday. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
Two new independently authored studies published in the journal Nature Astronomy provide new evidence that liquid water may be present in the Ultimi Scopuli region beneath the southern polar ice cap of Mars. One study was led by researchers at the University of Cambridge in the United Kingdom and the other by scientists at Roma Tre University in Italy. Both studies drew upon data gathered by the Mars Advanced Radar for Subsurface and Ionosphere Sounding, or MIRAS, an instrument aboard the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft. The British study also incorporated new topographic evidence and computer model results to make their findings. The Italian study authors say they gathered fresh data from MIRAS and used a new method of data analysis to make their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Of the many atrocities committed during Putin's full-scale war against Ukraine, some of the most grievous relate to Russia's filtration operations. Filtration is the anodyne word describing a massive operation the Kremlin has launched to intimidate, imprison, forcibly deport, or disappear those Ukrainian citizens that Moscow decides could be a threat to its imperial ambitions to control and then annex Ukraine's territory. A recent report by the Yale Humanitarian Research Lab identified 21 filtration-related facilities in the Donetsk Oblast alone. The report identified four types of facilities, those used for registration, holding, interrogation, and long-term detention. There are also checkpoints along main thoroughfares where Ukrainian civilians fleeing from Russia-controlled areas are subjected to filtration, and cases where civilians are simply rounded up and forcibly taken to filtration facilities. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, noted, estimates from a variety of sources, including the Russian government, indicate that Russian authorities have interrogated, detained, forcibly deported between 900,000 and 1.6 million Ukrainian citizens from their homes to Russia, often to isolated regions in the Far East. She also said estimates are that thousands of children have been subject to filtration, some separated from their families and taken from orphanages before being put up for adoption in Russia. Why is this filtration being done, along with other measures the Kremlin is taking in the areas of Ukraine currently held by Russia's forces? The imposition of Russia's educational curriculum in schools? Attempts to get Ukrainian citizens to apply for Russian Federation passports? The reason is simple, said Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield, to prepare for an attempted annexation. This effort to fabricate these facts on the ground is the predicate to sham referenda. It is part of the Russian playbook for Ukraine that we've been warning council members about since the beginning of the war. As the State Department has noted, the unlawful transfer and deportation of protected persons is a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention on the Protection of Civilians and constitutes a war crime. State Department Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vidant Patel said, "We demand Russia halt its filtration operations immediately. We call on the global community to join us in condemning this practice and calling for humanitarian access to be granted."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.